Okay. This evening I received, or rather this afternoon I received an email. A lady who follows these talks on the YouTube. Every evening when I'm talking here at least, these talks are broadcast. They do go all over the world. Many hundreds of thousands of people listen to these talks. I'm not exaggerating. And she asked whether I could give a talk on the idea of purity in this practice called Buddhism, especially just how it relates to the idea of purity which this lady had grown up with, probably in the Catholic tradition in Poland. And one of the things which I notice with the idea of purity is that, you know, being a monk for many, many years now, is that too often that is something which we try and impose upon ourselves, to be a goody-goody, to try and be a perfect monk, to try and control our body, speech and mind, so that we can always appear to be the perfect monk, especially if you're in religion. And many years ago I realized that that was making things worse. The more you try and control yourself, the more you get tense. You bottle things up, and when it does explode, it explodes big time. And I've seen that many, many times. People who look like they're perfect people, they always speak very softly and beautifully and kindly, but then when they do get angry, my goodness, they really blow up. And why is that? It's because purity will never come from controlling. It's not something you can fabricate and say, I, from now on, are going to be good. Many people make that mistake. They get inspired. So inspired by what they hear. That right, from now on, I'm going to keep all these precepts. I'm going to become a vegetarian. I'm going to join Greenpeace, Amnesty International. And I am going to never steal. I'm going to be so generous, give all my stuff away to charity. I am never going to not even have a partner. I'm going to be celibate just like Ajahn Brahm for the rest of my life. I'm not even going to speak. And I'm only going to eat sort of healthy food like green grass or whatever else people eat. And sometimes that people try so hard to be pure. And they become like a pain in the ass to everybody else. And I'm sure you understand what I mean. You know people like that? I know plenty of people like that. And the reason is because they haven't got an understanding what this purity really is. It's not a thing which comes from outside you can impose upon yourself. It's a thing which just develops and grows through wisdom. And it's a controlling which is stopping you. You know, now, of course, in the news over here in Australia and many parts of the world, sometimes I feel a bit sad for the Catholic clergy. Simply, they haven't had the means, the wisdom, the teachings, the help to live a celibate life. They've controlled it so much that when it does break, it has terrible, terrible consequences. That's why, please, controlling is not the way of any spiritual path. If it is, you're just bottling things up. Any psychologist will tell you that. So I don't pretend to be a monk. This is actually who I am. Those of you who see me at all sorts of other times, especially the monks who, you know, live with me in monasteries, you see, this is how I am all the time. I don't just pretend to be something when I'm up in front of a microphone and something, you know, when I'm by myself or just with a few other people. Because I realized a long time ago that would be a terrible, terrible life to live, a life of pretense, not being who you are. And so the reason why you can be a good monk is not because of controlling. It's a totally different path of purity. And that path of purity, I'm going to begin with an old Buddhist simile. And that Buddhist simile is of the lotus growing in the mud. A lotus, you know, the seed is under the water, in the dirty mud at the bottom of the lake. But it grows from there, and it takes all of its nutriment from that very rich, fertile mud. And it grows and grows through the mud, through the water, to the sunlight, above the top of the water, into the bright light, becomes a beautiful lotus flower. I like that simile because the lotus in Buddhism has always been the symbol of purity. It's a symbol of purity because once you have grown above the top of the water, nothing affects you. You can pee on a lotus and it does not keep any of the smell of the pee. You can pour Chanel No. 5 over that lotus and it keeps none of the fragrance. Whatever falls on that lotus leaves no residue. Just like what a pure person is, almost like a definition of a pure being. You can criticize them, you can call them a pig, you can call them stupid, you can call them the biggest idiot who ever wore a brown robe, and it leaves no residue. Can you do that? When people scold you, when people give you the one finger, can you just have it leaving no residue? Or when people praise you and say you're the best monk since the time of the Buddha, oh, you saved my life, you're so compassionate and kind, you are the best. That's Chanel No. 5 being poured on you. Can you have it leave no residue and exactly the same as you were before? That's what I mean about purity. This praise and blame which comes all over, you know, one of my best accolades was when somebody called me, you are, Ajahn Brahm, the Elvis of Buddhism. That was neat. I liked that one. Yeah, maybe that I did leave some residue. I quite like that. Anyway, back to like being pure, like the lotus. But you know, that's only the lotus which is opened. Because the next story I'm going to give about what actually purity is, or rather how purity is recognized, is a simile which I often give in meditation retreats. Very rarely I give here. I want to open some of these similes out to general audience. And it was a simile of like a lotus is a very common symbol for Buddhism. You go to many traditional Buddhist temples, you see lotuses all over the place. And it was an original symbol of Buddhism. And a lotus is closed up at night time. And the outermost surface of that lotus is rough and dirty and dusty. Because that has to take the wind, you know, with all the dust which comes across the lake. If ever you see a closed up lotus, you never believe that right in the center of that is something very pure and fragrant. The inner petals. The outer petal looks like just something ordinary and rough. But when the first light of the day hits that lotus, it warms the lotus petals up on the outside. So they open. They open to reveal the next layer of petals. And of course, the petals, which are just inside the outer petals, are still quite thick and rough. But that allows them to receive the warmth and light from the sun. So they can open up too, revealing another layer of petals, even more fragrant and more beautiful. Layer by layer, the lotus opens up. And the deeper you go, the more pure, beautiful, and fragrant that lotus is. I've used that as a simile for meditation, but it's not just meditation, it's just for the way we live our lives. In that simile, you are that lotus. When you're closed up, you look all dirty and rough and coarse. You never think that such purity exists inside a human being like that. Sometimes people say of some people, they're evil, they're bad, they're so mean, they're so cruel, they're so violent, they hurt people. But if you understand the symbol of the lotus, inside them too, there's incredible pure petals. They just haven't opened up yet. But opening up the lotus, you can't do that through force, through control, through will. That is one of the biggest misunderstandings of any spiritual life, especially religion. Doing it through force. Remember, everything else you've achieved in your life, you've worked hard, you've striven to achieve. Well done. But in a spiritual life, that doesn't work. You try and use those same techniques, striving, willing, working hard, and you do get more angry, more upset, more of a control freak, which is not a pure person. And I'm sure you've recognized what I mean. But the way to open up that lotus is using the light of mindfulness and the warmth of compassion. The light and warmth of the sun. And that opens up the human being. Awareness and kindness. I've had some amazing experiences in my life. Seeing some lotuses which are so closed, which you think are hopeless cases. People, you know, have done some very, very bad things in their life. Mostly when I visit prisons, or not just prisons, even people who come here have done some terrible acts. But I know inside of all those people, there are these beautiful layers of petals which just need to be opened up. And how do you open them up? Teaching a person to be more aware. Stop running away. Stop running away. And that's one of the most reasons we're so active in this world. We're always running away by making ourselves busy. There's so many things you don't have to do. Why do you do it? Because you're just afraid of stopping. Why is it you have a weekend? Why can't you just sit in the garden and do nothing? It's not that these things need to be done. There's things which can be done, but they don't need to be done. Look, there's only a week, is it 2 weeks' time, to the end of the world. So what's the point of fixing up your garden? What's the point of washing all the dishes? What's the point of washing the car? World's going to end soon. Ooh, so you've got 2 weeks, you can really relax. It won't end, but just imagine it's going to end. Just use that as an excuse to do nothing. Well, not an excuse, try it, see what happens. Why is it we can't just do nothing and just relax? And again, it's because we're afraid. It's one of the reasons why we can't open up that lotus. So a little bit of mindfulness, a little bit of compassion on ourselves. It's amazing how that opens up a human being. And that outermost shell, which is the protective shell, it takes all the wind and the dust of life. We want to see what's inside. That's where we find the purity. So it's amazing sometimes you've given some people a tiny bit of kindness and they've taken that on board and they've opened up and they've become incredibly beautiful people. You've opened them up so they can see themselves, that yes, actually inside of themselves is the most beautiful petals of a lotus. It's a wonderful simile. Please, if you don't know it, please believe that. If you cannot believe anything, please believe that you're a lotus. And you may look at yourself on the outside and think you're a hopeless case. So dirty, so coarse, so rough. How can ever this me be pure? I've got so many defilements, so many vices, so many bad stuff which I've done. No, open that up. See what's inside. And then you find in that outermost stuff, which isn't really that important, inside's incredible, beautiful part of you. I know in Mahayana they did sort of put it in the sense that everyone's got Buddha nature. Everyone's got purity right deep inside. And I know that is true. You just need to open yourself up. And as you do open yourself up, and that's one of the trainings we do in meditation, just being still, being kind, being mindful, being aware. And you do find you go inside of yourself. And what you'll find when you go inside is a beautiful, kind, peaceful, beautiful person who doesn't need anything, who's just beautiful as they are. You do become at peace with yourself. And the closer you get to that, that's where the real purity comes. Because when you stop trying to change yourself and control yourself, then you stop trying to change and control other people, which is the source of impurity. Arguing at others, trying to sort of make other people different, trying to make life different for goodness sake. All this stuff which we do to try and control our world, that is what causes impurity. That is where all the precepts which we have just fade away. You try and keep precepts. They're so difficult to keep just through, you know, through force. I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do anything else. It gets so frustrating. In the end, people break their precepts while no one is watching. Because they think that way they can get away with it. But no, it doesn't matter whether people are watching or they're not watching. Just be able to be pure, because it comes from within you. And that coming from within you is basically a little bit of self-esteem. I'm okay. That's one of the things which, again, I've taught to so many people. When you sort of talk to a person in some sort of spiritual crisis, it's amazing just how they take on the suffering of their life, which they're not really responsible for. They take that on themselves. They feel guilty for it. They think it's their karma, they have to deal with this, but it's not. And they feel themselves, they're not a worthwhile human being. And I've seen so many people who've been put down, who've been criticized, who've somehow in their life they've been abused sexually or physically, and they think they're not worth much anymore. And part of my job is to open up that little lotus leaf, which is closed on that layer of petals, and to see, my goodness, there is something beautiful inside of them. They are worthwhile. Just to give that little sense of self-worth is a beautiful gift to a person. Because once they think they are worthwhile, they are good inside. And it's amazing to see the transformation. Again, so many of those people I saw in jail, you know the old simile which I keep on saying, you're not a criminal. You're just a person who's done a crime. I see that it's not the criminal bit, it's just the outer layer of petals. There's more to you than that. You're not a murderer. You're a person who's killed. You're not a thief. A person who's stolen. There's no such thing as a liar. It's just people who tell lies. Some of the time. But never all of the time. See that other part of them. Focus on that other part of them, the inside of the lotus. They realize that's the essence of them. They go inside, and they see actually they are worthwhile. And that is the biggest hurdle for a person to pass, to be pure, to be good, to be kind. To realize that they are worthy. They are valuable, that they are respected. They've got their place in this world. They are okay. They are worthy of love, their own love and other people's love. Just to do that much is almost like the pivot point of the spiritual life. And from that time on, when people feel themselves as worthy human beings, it becomes very easy to be kind and very easy to be good. This self-destruction, this fear, which was why people control others and try and control themselves, which stops you being good. Good is the natural state of a human mind. It's only sort of stopped because we keep on messing around with things. We just only let go. We just be kind people, good people. It's natural to be kind and good. You see someone, when you see their goodness because you recognize their goodness is the same as your goodness, of course you're kind. It's so easy to love someone. And I don't mean the sort of the attached love, just the love to respect a person because you see the beauty inside of them. And you see their beauty because you've seen the beauty inside yourself. This is the source of kindness and goodness, the purity of body, speech, and mind. not forced, but revealed. And when we can actually start doing that, it's amazing just how relationships can change. We see, you know, our partner in life, the one we live with. It's amazing when you can see them as a pure person. How many of you just know all the faults of your partner? Let's just see outermost petals. Go deep inside. To go deep inside, actually to get them to reveal that to you. It's the same process. Awareness and kindness. If you're kind to someone, really kind to them, then they open up to you. And they show you all the wonderful kindness and beauty and softness, which is, you know, you might always say, almost say it's their essential nature. You have to draw that out, just like the sun has to shine on a person to make them grow. Your kindness, your awareness has to shine on others. And it's great for those of you who have children to bring out the goodness in them, to actually to nurture them. If you can show them your kindness and your sort of attention, of course they will grow into beautiful beings. If you give them violence, if you give them criticism, they just close up. That's one of the reasons why that children sometimes, that they do have a stunted spiritual development. Yeah, they're well trained in mathematics and English and other stuff at our schools. They're well trained in sport and physical education, but spiritual education, sometimes all one needs is a bit of kindness and praise and being valued. It's amazing sometimes that if you have, when you were growing up, someone who really valued you, they were always putting you down, but valued you for who you are, not trying to make you different. Sometimes I feel so sad for children in our modern world. So many hurdles they have to jump, so many things they have to achieve. The parents want the very best for their kids, but not with wisdom, and they usually give them the very worst. Just to love your kid for who they are. To tell your kid, I don't care what you did in this year's exams. I just love you the same anyway. Whether you came bottom of the class or top of the class, there's no distinction. You're my kid, I just love you, and that's it. In other words, don't put any pressure on your kids to be different. Give them kindness, and that opens them up. Try and give them force, control, always trying to push them. And of course, that just pushes them usually over the edge. And it's the same with yourself. If you want to learn how to be pure, to be a good person, a kind person, a moral person. What is morality anyway? What is virtue? The way that it's taught in Buddhism, which I can't really go past, virtue is not doing anything to yourself or anything to other people which causes them harm or pain. Not harming yourself, not harming others. That's all it is. I know that one of the monks, Ajahn Sujata, we're talking today, and he was actually quoting this Jewish rabbi, I think Rabbi Hillel or something, who was supposed to be a very wise man. And they asked him, can you recite the whole of the Jewish Torah on your head? And he said, yes, I can. All it is never doing to others what you won't want them to do to you. And I said, that's not good enough. Never doing to others what you wouldn't want them to do to you, or rather doing to others how you would treat them. What happens if you're a masochist? Doing to others what you'd like them to do to you. It doesn't work. That is... Come on, figure it out. That's where the golden rule breaks down. But it's not that. It's not harming or hurting others. And not harming or hurting yourself. That's the nature of like purity. So why is it that we harm and hurt others? It doesn't make any sense to me. Why do we hurt ourselves? When you put it that way, it doesn't make any sense at all. I remember years ago having a group of kids, you know, come and visit our center here years ago. And they wanted, the school trip wanted me to teach them some Buddhism. About 10 year olds or 11 year olds. So you can't teach 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds meditation from school. You can't teach them, you know, just the Four Noble Truths and all this deep stuff. So I just taught them just basic virtue. Don't do anything which hurts yourself or hurts others. And I asked them, you know, what do I mean by that? Give me some examples of what hurting others or hurting yourself is. You know, they got all the five precepts within 5 minutes. It's obvious, you know, killing others or killing even animals. It hurts them. It hurts a fish to have that hook put in its mouth. If you don't believe me, come over here, I'll get a hook and put one through your mouth. You know, it hurts a fly to be swatted. If you don't believe me, I'll get a fly to start hitting you. It hurts. And it hurts to take, you know, what is not yours, to steal. Have you ever lost anything, someone stolen things from you? That's really rotten. I mean, it's your car, you need it to go home, or it's your shoes or something, and you have to go home barefooted. Actually, you know that over here that sometimes when people come here, I always advise people, don't bring your best shoes. Because before, there was some people come with old shoes, and they come and see which ones they want to bring home. But even worse than that, over here, that we had a fate, over many, many weeks, people were losing one shoe. And they'd find one of their shoes, the other one was missing. And we were looking for a one-legged thief. But eventually we found the culprit. It was the dog next door. It's true, the dog would actually come over here. He had some fetish for the smell of, you know, your shoes. And would take them where we were giving the talk and hide them in his kennel. And just the house next door. And they went in the kennel, had all these shoes in the kennel. All from you guys. That's where it came from. But maybe the dog, you know, wasn't much of a thief. But you can see how much it hurts when you sort of, you lose something. And even like committing adultery, and having mistresses, or, you know, toy boys, whatever it's called. You know, that really hurts. And I heard that a nice story, you'll never get away with it. It's amazing how men always think that they can get away with it, they won't get caught. They do. And the argument these days, I heard this, someone told me, apparently the head of the CIA recently had an affair and he got caught. If the head of the CIA, with all of the training in secret devices, you know, secret phones and codes and safe houses and everything else. If he gets caught, guys, you've got no chance. So it hurts. It really hurts the whole family. I have, you know, counseled many families have gone through that. And it's just so painful. It's not worth doing. And even lying and not telling the truth. Again, you get caught out. It's really embarrassing when you have to admit, yeah, I'm sorry, but, you know, I didn't tell the truth. And I was called up someone recently. And I said, is your mum there? And this is a young kid answered the phone. She said, no, mum's not here. I said, it's Ajahn Brahm speaking. And the kid shouted out, mum, are you in? It's Ajahn Brahm. You're training your kid to lie. That's not a good thing. You know what kids are like? They'll always, you know, reveal the truth. They're not very good at hiding things. So it just doesn't make sense, the sort of lying. Lastly, even taking alcohol. What do you take that for? Even dogs don't drink alcohol. But people say, oh no, it's good fun. And just use your intelligence. Is it good fun or is it not good fun? Try the opposite. So a lot of times it's just, even the little kids got this pretty quickly. These are things which harm yourself or harm other people. It's not worth doing. You can see that what all these purity does is just common sense to have a happier time, a good time. I remember just teaching a retreat just about this time, but this was over in Safety Bay many years ago. And I was just doing the interviews for the meditation. And just between interviewees, I happened to look out the window. And this was a Catholic retreat center in Safety Bay. And I happened to look out the window. It was a Sunday. And they just finished their church meeting. And two guys were coming outside. And they were just saying Merry Christmas to each other and, you know, have a great time. And one of the guys said to the other, be good. The other one said, no, that's no fun. And I thought, that's so sad when people in our society feel that being good is no fun and being bad is more fun. But when you actually look at it, you know, just being good is much more fun. I'm a good time monk. If you want to have a good time, then be good. So the purity is just coming from common sense. It doesn't make any sense to lie to people. These are the monks I live with. These are the people you live with. The people you respect. The people you, you know, you love and care for. Why do you want to lie to them for? Tell them the truth. One of the nice things, again, I mentioned this I think last week, is the only reason why people lie is because they're afraid of being punished. And you know, that's the other thing, that we don't have punishment in this Buddhism. Being pure will be stopped by all this punishing business. Punishment is not the way to make people good. You know, I think you've all realized that, you know, every time that you have, you know, made a mistake and got punished, that doesn't teach you to be good and be pure. All that punishment does is to make sure that you don't get caught next time. Every time you get pinged by the police because you, you know, hit a speeding camera, you just have to know where those speeding cameras are located next time so you don't get caught again. That's all I learned when I was at school. Every time I got punished at school, it just made me be a little bit more sneaky so I wouldn't get found out next time. That's all it did. So punishment never actually works. So if you have kids, if you have a partner, and you just try and punish them to make them pure and good and whatever it is, it does not work. Forgiveness works. Forgiveness is so powerful. Someone does something bad, you say, never mind, I forgive you. That really gets inside of them. What do you mean you're going to forgive me? I've hurt you. It's okay. Because I don't want you to be afraid. Next time that happens, I want you to tell people. No punishment. So you can learn what it feels like. You're harming yourself. You're harming others. That's all the punishment. It's just learning. This is not really a good thing to do. Through kindness and awareness, the lotus opens. Fear stops awareness. And fear comes from the fear of punishment. How can you be really aware of what you did when you're afraid of it? You're afraid you're a bad person. That's why that sometimes people ask me, sort of, well, how much should you forgive? And once I conjured up an example of the most evil person who ever lived, meeting, you know, the symbol of ultimate love. I imagined and Adolf Hitler meeting the Buddha. And what would happen? Is Adolf Hitler responsible for the cruel murder of millions of people, not just Jews, but homosexuals, people with deformities, all these people trying to get rid of in his society. And he was responsible for all of that. And meeting a Buddha, what would happen? The Buddha would look at Adolf Hitler. You bad man, bad man. But never mind. Adolf, the door of my heart is fully open to you. Come in. And the Buddha would give Adolf this big hug. No punishment, no blame, but incredible kindness and compassion. And that would melt someone like an Adolf Hitler. It would show him there's more to himself than he'd ever imagined before. He would open his lotus to see what was inside. And realize he would never need to do such a thing ever again. Rehabilitation comes from kindness, not through punishment. Punishment hides the truth. It stops growth. This kindness is what opens up the lotus. So if you need to have purity, that's why I don't know why it is. People come along and they tell me all the terrible things they've done. And you know, every time the monks actually will admit to this, and people who've, you know, gone to my retreats will say, yeah, this is what happens. People come along and they say, yeah, I've slept throughout the whole of your talks. And I say, very good. And they say, I've just been reading pornographic books in the monastery all week. And I say, very good. You know, whenever people ask me, I always say, very good. That's become such a joke now. That one of the ladies who was staying in my monastery for the week was SMSing her partner all the time. Said, oh, now how are you? You know, I'm worried about you. I don't know how you're going without me. And all he would say every time was, very good. Very good. And that very good thing is, it's a positive reinforcement of that person, no matter what they're doing. You're not blaming them. You're not trying to punish them. You're just giving them a bit of kindness, a bit of respect. Understand that people actually are trying their best. If you can just give them a bit of a break, a bit of encouragement, then they will open the lotus and they'll see the great purity which is inside of them. That is a Buddhist path. And you open up. You go beyond that outermost shell. You don't try and punish. The kindness and the awareness of what you are. Staying this moment, that's where awareness lies. And giving it kindness. You'll find in each one of you, no matter what you've been through, you've got this incredible pure heart inside. Every lotus, even ones which are deformed because they've been hit or trodden on, doesn't matter, inside, they've got the most pure heart. Fragrant, beautiful, and lovely. So that's what we do to ourselves. That's why in this place here, only kindness, never any blame. We don't have fines in this monastery or in this temple. I know that there was this one occasion when I was giving a talk some years ago, just around that corner over there. When I started giving a talk, somebody lay down and fell asleep and started snoring. And somebody woke them up. And I said, please never do that again. People are allowed to sleep and snore during my talk. Because I knew that person. They were a victim of quite severe domestic abuse. They came here because this was the only place they felt safe. And when they came here, the safeness, the safety, the kindness in this place, the peace. This was a time she could catch up on her sleep. She was so tired through fear of the next round of abuse. She felt safe here. So she lay down and tried to get some sleep. Please do that next time. Don't wake people up. Kindness. If ever any of you visit monastery where I live, yeah, we have our monastic rules, but the first rule is always compassion, kindness. That rules all other rules, being kind, because that's what opens up. And I know when you're kind to someone, when you forgive them, they become pure. They become really kind and good people. You ask the people who've been to my monastery. I'm not a control freak, Abbot. My mentor, and I've got his sayings next to the seat where I sit. My mentor, for those of you who are my age, was a character in a TV series called Hogan's Heroes. It was the commandant, no, it was the guard of a prisoner of war camp called Schultz. And Schultz was famous for saying, I see nothing, I see nothing. And that's the way I run Bodhinyana Monastery. I see nothing, I see nothing. And that's true, isn't it, JR? Very much so. But I give a heap of kindness. And it's because of the kindness there that makes people grow. That makes people become better people. That makes people start to be pure and good. That is what opens up a lotus. That's where purity comes from. I've done that to myself. Punish, be afraid, and you keep things bottled up. Kind, aware, and everything just vanishes. And you just become good. The lotus opens. I've done that to others. That's the way I train my monks. Kindness, awareness, and they become very beautiful people. Soft, welcoming, at peace with themselves, and at peace with others. So that is where purity comes from. If you follow the wrong path, blame, punishments, prison, detentions and stuff like that, you'll find you'll never get pure, and you'll miss the beauty and the happiness of a pure heart, of a kind heart, of goodness. Goodness is fun. It's one of the great teachings of the Buddha. The more goodness you have, the more happiness you have. He called it the Anuvajjasukha, just quoting Pali, the blameless happiness. You walk around, you haven't done anything wrong, and because you haven't done anything wrong, because you're just a generally kind people, you become actually invulnerable. People can't harm you. I remember the story in one of the Buddhist books about this. He was a Zen teacher, but a very kind man. And he got in a lift and an elevator with this Hell's Angel who had a knife and a chain and was going to beat up somebody. And the person who wrote this story, he was like the attendant of this Zen monk. And the Zen monk started talking to the bikie. I said, "Don't talk to him, you'll upset him, he's got a knife, he'll kill us, this is New York." He said, no, and he was just having a nice kind conversation with the bikie. And as you know, they parted when the elevator reached one person's floor and they had to get out. "Hi, have a nice day." "Yeah, same to you. All the best." And they were just so kind to each other. And then, of course, he went to his bikie mode and sort of probably beat somebody up, I don't know. But because this guy was so kind and caring, this had actually softened up the bikie. I've done that many times, just outside here. This is one of my nice stories. When I almost got flattened by a punch. This was, for those of you, this must be about 25 years ago now, when we just moved in here, to this complex here. And we decided to have a big opening ceremony. And we invited Sir Gordon Reid. He was the Lieutenant Governor of West Australia at the time. You know, that's the Reid Highway, is named after him. He got cancer afterwards and died. He's really, really one of the best governors West Australia's ever had. So we invited him. He actually came. And I was, Ajahn Chacko was the abbot there. He gave me the job of ordering the marquees and the chairs and all of that stuff for the event. So, and he told me, and the treasurer told me, "We've got the governor coming and lots of politicians. We want to make a really good show, so order the very best." And so I actually rang up this firm, I think, in Claremont, a hire firm, which hired all the stuff to, these big functions in Pepe Grove and Dalkeith, the rich guys. I said, "We want the very best because, we're trying to sort of, Buddhism has arrived in Perth." But when it came, when the marquee and the chairs came, we had about 10 VIP chairs. I was helping somebody else because we help each other. So when I actually checked on what they delivered, the van had already gone. And you wouldn't believe how dirty the stuff was. The marquee was like, being out in the bush somewhere. It's covered with red dust. So we got hoses out to hose it down. And the chairs, they were filthy chairs. I mean, no one could sit on those. So, but, we can get some cloths and wipe it all down. But the problem which we couldn't fix was the VIP chairs. This was the chair the governor and his wife would sit on, sort of on Sunday. This was Friday evening. None of those 10 chairs had legs the same length. They all wobbled. And that was it. So I immediately got on the telephone. I managed to catch the manager just before she closed the office and went home. Friday night. And I said, "Do you remember me? Look, I asked for the very best. We've got the governor coming on Sunday. I don't know what chairs you've given us, but none of them actually balance. The governor's going to fall over on Sunday. Don't you remember I asked for the very best?" He said, "Yes, I remember that. There must be some big mistake. I'll get them changed. Thank you so much. Now, this was Friday evening in Perth. Of course, all the people who worked in that hire firm, you know where they were? Down the pub. So this manager goes into the pub and says, you've got to come back to work. The Buddhists need some chairs. So you can imagine what these people felt. They were really upset. So when they came down, I always remember this, they came down this road, I was waiting for them this time, I wanted to make sure it was done right this time. Halfway down, you know, from Constance Street to this hall here, halfway down, the truck was still going, I don't know, about 30, 40 kilometres an hour. One of the guys jumped out when it was still moving. And he had his fist like this. Where's the guy in charge? I want the guy in charge. So I went up to him and said, sir, I'm the guy in charge. He had his fist right in front of my nose like this. And his eyes were red. He'd been drinking. And just his breath, you can tell he'd been drinking. Because I had to breathe all that stuff in. That's the most alcohol I've ever imbibed since being a monk. But you know what I did is, everybody actually stopped what they were doing to watch. None of you helped. They're all sitting there, oh, what's going to happen next? That's what friends are like. But because I had kindness, there was a beautiful guy there. He was just a bit upset. The outside of his lotus was a bit dirty, you know, for drinking, but inside a beautiful heart. So I just had no fear at all, just looking at him. And you know, because I didn't respond with anger back, he was stuck. Now, I always remember that because he couldn't do anything. He was actually waiting for me to do something so he could do the next part of this, what you call like foreplay to violence. Yeah, yeah, you and who else? Yeah. Because I wasn't going to play like that, he actually got stuck. And I had this incredible sense of power over this guy. I could keep him there for hours if I wanted to. And he couldn't move. And that was about 2 or 3 minutes. He was just, you know, eyeballing me. And I could see, please do something. I don't know what to do next. And then, you know, the truck had parked. And the boss had come out to see us. And he put the hand on the guy's shoulder. Come on, we'll unload the chairs. So, yeah, I'll come and help you. We unloaded the chairs together. No problem at all. So that's actually how, if you look at beautiful people, the beauty in people, with purity, you can't be hurt. You become invulnerable. Even people just can't say bad things to you because you're just too kind. A beautiful lotus, once it's opened, will be put on an altar and valued. If you've opened and are pure, you'll be protected. You'll be cared for because people don't want to harm beautiful things. So don't be afraid. Purity is not only good fun, it also makes you invulnerable. People won't get so angry and upset at you. They just can't do that anymore. You're just far too soft and cuddly and nice. So that is a little way what purity means. Not just what it means, but how it happens. That purity is fun. It's good, you have a wonderful time, have lots of people, you know how to love, you love yourself, you love others. Great relationships, great friends. It's worthwhile, and this is how it's done. Don't force it. Kindness and awareness together opens you up. Thank you for listening. Okay, we've got a couple. But first of all, are there any questions from our local audience before the people overseas get in? Any questions for me? Oh, Eddie. Yes, go on. Yes, Eddie.
Ajahn Brahm, yeah. Ajahn Brahm, can observing, you know, the Buddhist precepts be a form of measurement, you know, of Buddhist purity? Like the 5 precepts, the lay people do 8 precepts, and the monks, they observe 227 precepts, okay. And the nuns, 300 over precepts.
Okay, the precepts, it's not observing them makes you pure, it's how you observe them makes you pure. In other words, how much kindness is really there, or are you just so afraid of making the slightest mistake? And I've seen people so tight and tense as monks. Even, this is a problem, and I'll keep on mentioning this, in the monastery where I live. When people come and they start their training, when they wear white as 8 preceptors, too many leave because they're trying to be the perfect, you know, postulant. And they're afraid to be themselves. They're on walking on eggshells, trying to keep all the rules. So I say, no, keep rule number 1, first of all, be kind. Then all the other rules will come. It's not just keeping the 5 precepts, it's why you keep them, how you keep them, where they come from. If you're just trying to keep them to be a goody-goody, then that is measurement. But if you're keeping them as a manifestation of your kindness and wisdom, then fine. That's the real 5 precepts. That's one of the reasons why people sometimes, this is some of the traditions of Buddhism, they come to the temple, they try and keep 5 precepts for one day. It may be a holy day, like a Waisak. And that's just Mickey Mouse Buddhism. You know, just trying to keep it for one day. Now, if you're going to keep it, keep it. Why? Because if it's good for one day, why can't it be good for all days? You do it because it's the right thing to do. It feels good. It's wonderful. So that's actually why you observe it. Question over there.
Ajahn, I just want to ask you, so many times I saw big supermarket like Woolworths or Kohl's, after 5-6 o'clock, they threw away fruit and meat and so many things. And a few times, because I saw they threw away and they don't need it, so I pinch some of that. Is according to morality, is it really stealing? Because they threw away.
Yeah, that's as far as the Buddhism is concerned, for the monks, if they throw it away, you can pick it up. It has to be an owner. If it's owned by somebody and you pick it up, then that's stealing. If it's no one owns it, of course you can take it. So it's not stealing at all. You haven't broken the precepts, and your motivation was being kind, being compassionate. So wonderful. So no problem at all there. Anyway, we got a first question from Bangkok. Ajahn Brahm, there are many people who do bad things again and again with no regret whatsoever. What is your opinion on this? It's because they're just a lotus who's so closed up. They don't even know what they're doing. They've probably never had any kindness in their whole life. So that's one of the reasons why they do bad things again and again and with no regret. They're not really aware of what they're doing or why they're doing it. There's so many people like that are going in a cloud. They may have a cloud of drugs, cloud of alcohol, cloud of busyness. That's the third drug in our world. You know, we're getting rid of smoking. Drugs, alcohol is one of the drugs, but the other drug is busyness. Always running around because you escape from being here. And if you're not aware of what you're doing, that's the first reason why people do bad things. They just don't know what they're doing. Literally. That's one of the reasons when you start meditating, become aware of yourself and of your bodily feelings and your mental world, just that awareness, you just can't do bad things anymore. You just can't do it. Just, why am I hurting myself? You realize, why did I do that for so many years, harm and hurt myself by putting all these poisons in me, by harming other people? You just can't do it. So that's one of the reasons, no awareness, no kindness. And one of the reasons is because we live in societies, you know, where awareness and kindness isn't really promoted. Societies of punishment and fear and control. Well, we're trying to change that little by little. Second question, Mona from India. Ajahn Brahm, desire for perfection creates high achievers. Many inventions are a result of this, so why is perfection an enemy? High achievers, what have they achieved? Global warming, stress, cancers. Many inventions are a result of this, so why is perfection an enemy? Has inventions actually improved the quality of people's lives? How much time do you have for each other, for yourself. Sometimes we think, if we could have an invention to make time go slower, that would be something very good. Actually, there is one. It's called meditation. And desire for perfection. That is a problem there. I mean, it's not... Perfection is okay if you could only understand what perfection is. I often say that this is actually from the teachers in Thailand. Have you ever seen a forest with perfect trees, you know, all nice and straight, with all their branches, you know, equally spaced, you know, within lines and rows? If you do, that's called a plantation run by the government. In a real forest, in a real jungle, the trees are all over the place. And they're all knotted and gnarled, where a branch has fallen off here, a branch has fallen off there. That's beautiful. That's why people love going to natural, where there is injuries, leaning over this way, leaning over that way. How many perfect people are in this room? None of you are. If you were a perfect person, you'd be, again, a pain in the ass. You've got all your different sort of character traits and failings. You know, you've got always something wrong with you. That's what makes you beautiful. That's what makes you lovable. That's why I love the forests. That's why I love the sunsets in Western Australia. When it's imperfections, like clouds or dust on the horizon, then those oranges and crimsons and golds of sunsets are spread, and it's beautiful. So perfection is the enemy. It tries to make this world something it can never be. Love is seeing that people are already perfect. You love your kid, even though he's the bottom half at school. Kid, you're perfect. You don't have to come in the top half. I love you for who you are. Do your best, and that's good enough for me. Whatever that best turns out to be. Do you wish that your parents and teachers had said that to you? A wonderful world if people did that. So, the perfection is really that love and acceptance, that warmth, having time for one another. High achievers, yeah, they're achieving the wrong thing. I'm a high achiever. But my idea of perfection is different than everybody else's. And lastly, Stephen from Singapore. How do I balance the Buddha learning in such a busy environment? Oh, the more busy you are, the more you need the Buddha environment. This is one little saying I got from a person who said because they were Buddhist, they would meditate every day for 1 hour. Every day they'd meditate 1 hour a day, except when they were busy. And when they were busy, they'd meditate 2 hours. They'd meditate more when they were busy. Why? Because they had to use their brain more efficiently when they were busy. They couldn't afford to make mistakes or stress out when they were busy. Well, Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh used to say, there's not much time, therefore we have to go slowly. Counterintuitive, but so true. When there's not much time, you can't afford to rush and make mistakes and stress out. When there's not much time, go slowly. You'll achieve more than rushing and falling over and making mistakes. How much time in your life is wasted fixing up mistakes because you rushed? How much time do you waste because you're so stressed out you can't think clearly? That's why the Buddha environment will enhance your busy world. You'll be able to achieve more in less time with less stress. That's why these teachings are now on Harvard Business School blog. People have been watching my teachings and get into Harvard Business School blog, and there they see that lowering your expectations. That's one thing on Harvard Business School blog. Well, they had to have it from here, because I've been teaching this. Lower your expectations. Don't raise them. That gives you too much stress. They say if businesses would lower their expectations, they'd be far more successful. Number two, again, half an hour meditation in the middle of the day is an investment for the afternoon. That's another of my little sayings, so that's on the Harvard Business School blog. So, Stephen from Singapore, you are listening now to the source of the modern wisdom of Harvard Business School. This is where it comes from. And you get it first. You got the edge over all the other businesses in Singapore. Wow, you're going to be rich. Okay. So thank you, everybody, for listening today. And thank you for all those questions from overseas. Any more questions here before we finish off? Yeah. You got a question? Why is Santa next to you? Because Santa is kind and very generous. Does Santa ever tell you off? Does he ever punish anybody? But is Santa very generous? That's why he's sitting next to me. A good Buddhist. Okay. Never let religion be too serious. Always have good fun. Okay, we can now pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we can go and do what we need to do.